the most embarrassing part is summoning up the presenter energy to do that hello and welcome thing, because it's always corny and it's always unnatural. But
the people want it. They want it.
They want it. And they won't let me sleep unless they get it.
How will they know it started?
Okay. Hello and welcome to the Studio Mala podcast. Joining me on the podcast this time is India Swift.
Hello.
And Michael Doig.
That's me.
And they are...
I hate that already.
We're keeping it. It's perfect.
Oh. I swear, everything in the edit is going to be incredible. You're going to be like, yeah. Was that me? Was that me saying, like... that's me?
Sound effects can be explosions and like lightsaber sounds and stuff.
Anything that comes out poorly, I'll just bury under sound effects like helicopter swooping around. So... tell me, how did you both end up here on an animation podcast? You must have something to do with animation.
I was just walking along one day and I fell down this hole. And when I came to, I was surrounded by these roadie-looking fellas and they were like, we're the animators and now you're one of us. And I've never been able to climb out since. So
is this your Batman-esque origin story? You fell into a cave and you were surrounded by the symbol that you would wear on your chest, animators.
I mean, do you want an actual story? I can tell you the actual reason.
Yeah, tell me, what actually drew you to, pardon the pun.
That's a good pun right there.
I'll do it in every episode from now on. What drew you both to animation initially?
For me, it was that I grew up watching cartoons on TV when I was a kid. Like, that was my preferred form of story consumption. So I was, you know, watching Sonic the Hedgehog, SWAT Cats, all that good stuff. And when I realized I could do it myself, when I realized that was a job that you could do, there was, like, no dissuading me from doing it. Because I'd always loved drawing. And to me, that was, like, the perfect meeting between drawing characters all the time and being able to tell a story with them. The thought that you could make something that other people could watch and they could connect to, when it could like come, you could show them a world and these characters, was just a mind blow for me. And it still is to this day. I still think it's magical and wonderful. How about you, Mike?
I think a big part of the reason that I started to pursue animation more seriously happened in university when they had a mentor come in called Fraser McLean. And he had previously worked in Disney and things. And the lectures that he gave and the enthusiasm that he showed for animation as an art form was contagious. I'd always enjoyed watching animation growing up, but I'd always thought I would go into games development. So through university, I swung back and forth between, I'm going to make games. No, I want to make animation. No, games. And I don't think I've ever quite escaped that maelstrom between the two. And I think upon meeting India, I've just been a fugitive of animation, trying to escape it at every turn, but she's there.
Oh, jeez.
No, I kid. I think living with an animator has kind of kept that spark alive for me.
It's lovely. It's going to be the mushiest podcast yet.
It's all about love and peace and getting along.
No.
And sharing.
You're talking to a couple. Oh no.
It is great though, like honestly, because Mike has a much broader skill set than me. So being able to work with him on projects a lot is wonderful, because not only is he really good at what he does, but it allows me to just hone in and focus on just the stuff I enjoy the most, which is the actual drawing of stuff. And Mike will often help me make the things that I want to make look the way I want them to look and pull them together the way that I'm hoping they will be pulled together, because his skill set is so broad.
Yeah, I tend to try and do everything India doesn't do.
I do one thing and then Mike does everything else, is like generally how it works.
I think it must be great to have someone in your life that close who sort of has your back and encourages and understands what it is you're doing. I do feel very sorry for people. I sometimes hear these stories of, if there's one person in a relationship who has this creative, whatever it is, this urge to create and to work in the arts, it can be difficult if the other isn't on that same wavelength, because the amount of time that a creative field asks of you, it can, I think, for people who aren't a part of it, it can be harder for them to understand just how much you have to put into it. And, you know, in a relationship, that can definitely be, you know, that could lead to a quarrel, I imagine.
Yeah, it's definitely like animation is like a sponge. Just any time you put into it, it will soak up and just ask for more. But I do think sometimes, like, I feel the same. I also sometimes feel bad if people are with others who maybe don't necessarily understand the ins and outs of everything. But at the same time, we have a couple of friends who are in relationships where one person is an artist and the other does something completely different. And in some ways, like, that works just as well or better, because it incites them to actually take breaks and spend time with one another and do things that aren't, like, keeping them glued to the computer screen. So for some people, that works even better, is having that kind of dynamic. Mike and I have just always found that it works really well for us, that we're both into the same kind of artistic expression.
So you're both making each other better, but also both making each other worse.
Yeah, we're dragging one another down.
It's like heaven or hell, we're going there together.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think one of India's first gifts to me as a couple was,
oh no,
she gave me a desk that was next to hers where I could put my laptop to work at. I think I was
but it was romantic, right? It was like a romantic desk.
Yeah, you made a little chalkboard sign that was like Doig's desk, and it was next to yours. It
Doig's
was
desk,
it was adorable.
Get to work.
It. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a little chain next to it and everything, you know.
I need someone to do all the things I can't now. Come on.
At the same time, like, I do think it's good as well to be able to get away from working on stuff together. Because, like, any project, there are tensions that arise on the project if we're both working on it together. And outside of work, you know, we're stressed about the deadlines that are happening in work. And we're both in that space all the time. You know, sometimes it's nice to be able to work on separate stuff so that we're not kind of bringing that outside of office hours.
Yeah. There's been projects that we worked on where India's my director. And so you have to have like these compartmentalized conversations, which is like, you're late on these deadlines, but what would you like for dinner?
Yeah. And I imagine it is important to keep some kind of imaginary line between those things, because you can't bring the who didn't wash their plate to the work table the next day. Like, you can't.
Oh, that never.
Those
that
things
never,
can't.
That never comes up.
The twain shall meet.
We don't really fight about household chores and stuff. It is.
That's brilliant, though. I'm going to use that next time. Well, like, you've got 2 days less on this deadline because you left that dish in the sink. Uh-huh. There have been times, though, when we've been talking to one another on a deadline and realize that we're talking to one another as though we're friends or in a relationship rather than as if we're working together, where things start to get like a little bit more emotional and personal than they probably should. And that's when we have to like step back and be like, I wouldn't speak to anyone else on the team like this. Mm-hmm. So like, you have to learn to respect those boundaries for sure.
I wouldn't be throwing furniture at anyone else on the team.
I mean, not unless it's part of the project, you know.
The educational streams that you do together, what got you started wanting to help others with their own animation?
I hate to admit it, but I think actually starting the streams was entirely selfish on my part. Basically, I was working at Boulder Media at the time, and I had just decided that I was going to take a long hiatus to work on my first graphic novel. So I was working at home on my own, and I was just really missing the studio environment, and I was missing being able to talk to people about animation and geek out with people about animation. And I really just wanted to find a community of people who would like share that passion with me and get excited with me about, you know, all everything animation and how cool it is. So I started streaming just kind of hoping to put myself out there and find other people who were interested in the kind of work I was doing and wanted to just chat while I was working on stuff. And as people came to the stream, which was surprising in itself, Doig was the one who had the idea to hook that up to like a chat server. And as that grew, Doig got involved in the streams and it kind of organically turned into this this larger thing.
The way that we structure it is that it's our morning routine are the streams. It's the way of kind of showing what the struggle is as an artist.
It's like making it mundane in a way, deliberately. Because one of the things that Mike and I both really believe is that anyone can animate. You know, it's the Ratatouille thing. Anyone can be a great cook. Like the main drive between the educational side of the stuff we do now, which is kind of become a bigger focus for us, because we've seen a lot of people who seem very unconfident about diving into animation, especially people who maybe didn't go to school for it or are a little bit older and they feel like they've either missed their chance or don't have the grounding they need to get into it, is we really want to demystify the process for people and show them that, you know, as we're doing it, we're always internally panicking about it and kind of shooting from the hip a lot of the time.
Or uncertain, or we're having to figure out problems that we don't have the answers immediately and you don't need to have them before you attempt something.
Yeah, and seeing something be made in front of you step by step, I think makes it feel more approachable in that way. It's because you can follow someone going from thumbnails into storyboards into animation and just being able to see what goes into it and how it doesn't need to necessarily be perfect, I think can unlock the shackles of fear that are on so many people when it comes to starting a project like that. Because it can, when you're looking at a mountain as a mountain rather than a series of small steps, it can feel super overwhelming.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if anyone were to sit and watch Disney's Atlantis,
yes,
they're not going to think, well, I can do that.
Exactly.
You both always seem to be so active and great output all the time. I'm just want your thoughts on what's a good way to approach a healthy work-life balance.
Oh no. Oh no.
I'm not sure we've achieved that equilibrium to give advice on that, but we can give a shot of like what is important for avoiding burnout is not to get lost in the process of I have to do this next. You've got to really retain hold of what is it you want to be doing, because as soon as you lose like your hold on or your grasp on what you're in this for and why you're doing it, that's when your energy just gonna get pulled out of you. That's when the wind's like out of your sails.
Yeah, it's very easy to become super hyper focused in on what you're doing and just have I have to get this done running through your head on repeat, and not be able to like push yourself back from your monitor, take a deep breath, breathe out, go and watch an episode of something, have some good food. And remember that it's not the absolute end of the world if you have to say to your director, hey, I need another day to get this done, to make it as good as I want to make it. And here's the progress so far. Like communication is the main thing on projects involving other people. It's a little bit easier not to get burned out when you're working on projects for yourself just because you get to dictate the deadlines, but it does still happen. I think it's just the enormous amount of pressure that we as artists put on ourselves. Is everyone who's doing this always wants to do the best they can do, and that's natural, but I think being able to understand that good and done is better than perfect but not done helps with a lot of the pressure that is associated with burnout and can lead to it. Just being able to let things go and either come back to them later or just let them be. And if they do the job, then that's fantastic. And you can put your time into other aspects that also need to get done.
I think structuring your time each day is important. Having like bookends between this is my start time and this is my end time, so that what you're doing doesn't inflate to fill all the time you have, and knowing like when you can step away. I know I'm kind of bad for that, where I just let my time just like, oh, it's the end of the day and I'm not tired yet, I'll just keep pushing through. But it just means you end up staying up later and later. I think if you like set a time limit for yourself or have those limits, It's a lot better to work in a shorter amount of time in a more focused way than it is to have a larger amount of time in a less focused way. So maybe set a short deadline for yourself of like an hour, and then decide, like, I want to be able to get this done in that time, and see what you're capable of.
That's so true. It can feel so miasmic and overwhelming, and you can get so lost in it if you don't have those small goals. Because if something just feels like a huge deadline that you're swimming towards, but you can't feel yourself making progress, it can be like very demotivating.
Yeah. Because if you're only ever answering the question, is it done yet? Then the answer every day for you is just going to be no.
How do you both decide that's done, like lying under? What's the point where you step away and don't give it one last little touch? One, because you can, you know, you can sculpt forever, but there's a point where you got to step away.
That's true.
For us, it's usually when the client decides they won't let us work on it anymore.
Yeah, when the client snatches it away.
Ripping it out of your hand. You're like, no, just let, I can get a really nice little subtle blink in here. I can do it.
Absolutely, like away from our clutches.
I think on projects that we worked on in music videos in the past, we've handed something in and the clients went, that's awesome, thank you very much. And we're like, it's not finished yet. We'll get back to you.
Yeah, give us like 3 more weeks to polish it. Like, yeah. There's some stuff that we just need to iron out. So it's very hard to keep that perfectionism down. So it's a tough question, especially on our own projects when we don't have someone taking it out of our hands. How to know when to move on to the next stage. I think often helpful is the fact that we're excited for the next stage. So there's like a drive there for us to want to kind of finish it as soon as possible, so that we can see, like, for me, I get so excited to see how Mike's going to composite it.
Yeah.
To the point where I'm like annoyingly hovering over every 5 minutes to be like, how's it looking now? How's it looking now?
Yeah. That's a terrible phase of the project.
I'm so sorry.
Now, you mentioned music videos. I think the listeners would tear me to pieces if I didn't mention and ask about the Starlight Brigade. with just cause. I mean, yeah, they should. They should destroy me. It seems kind of silly to say this, considering the video is currently around 13 million views. The last thing, just about to hit 13 million. But for anyone listening who does not know, can you tell us what is the Starlight Brigade and how you got involved in that music video?
Starlight Brigade is the first project I got to direct with Knights of a Light Table. We had previously worked with Patrick on the Night Runner music video that was running alongside it. And the offer came in to work on this new music video by this band called TWRP, who we're big fans of. And it was a collaboration between them and Dan Avidan about this boy who goes to space, was the pitch that we got given. Mm-hmm. That was our starting point. They wanted to replicate 80s and 90s anime and have this kind of sincere and motivating and fun space adventure. And Patrick, who is CAO of the Knights of a Light Table, asked us if we wanted to do it. And we said, yeah. And we didn't know what we were letting ourselves in for, but we gave it our all. And it's still kind of mind-blowing to me, the reception that it's received. And I'm so happy we got to work with the team that we did on that, because huge props to everyone who worked on it. We couldn't have done it without them. You know, they brought their A game.
He certainly did. I rewatched it earlier and I was re-amazed. I don't know if that's a word, but I'll invent it for the occasion. It really is just stunning work.
Thank you so much.
I remember that came out only shortly before we met for the first time. I'm just bragging to the listeners now. That's right. I know. But we met for some lunch ramen, because of course we did. We're all cliches. Heck, we yeah. Know it. I remember sitting there and thinking, I can't believe that thing I watched. These people with their hands. made it happen. It was wonderful.
Fingers.
Yeah, a clawed hands. The video really is a product of that team, and they all put in so much work, and everyone on it was, you know, they were putting in willingly, you know, weekends just because they were so excited about the project. And it is what it is because of them. We are so happy that their work is getting seen by so many people.
The fan response was huge, of course. And how do you deal with that? How do you take on a response like that? I can't imagine, like, even just thinking about the amount of people who have seen it, never mind the costumes and the fan art and things like that. What's that like for you?
It's just been, like, it's been wonderful. I think there's a benefit to being an animator on a project where animators aren't usually, like, seen as rock stars or famous people. So there's kind of, there's a aspect of being able to kind of hide while watching the fan response, because I feel like a lot of the messages about it are probably going to go to Dan or Twerp rather than to the animation team. So we get to see a lot of the very positive responses, but we don't get the kind of more intense side of fans like contacting you because of, you know, how big it's gotten.
Yeah.
So for us, it was just getting to see the fan art, the cosplays. It was bizarre and incredible. Like the team shed multiple tears overseeing some of these pieces that people were making. Because just knowing that something that you've made, that you really put your heart and soul into, because we all care so much about the video, to know it was connecting with people and that it was inspiring people to make their own stuff is perhaps the coolest possible response you could get to a piece of work as an animator.
And that certainly seems like the dream project, but what is each of your personal, your dream project? What animation project would you like to conjure into being? If
oh man, okay, putting out there, I want to do an animated series. I want to be a showrunner at some point. I think that would be so fun and so cool, an animated show. And I'd love to make it something which is not necessarily aimed at kids, but not one of the adult shows that relies on, say, crude humor or anything like that. I'd like it to just be a series that fits into a genre.
Well, I hope that happens, because I want to see that.
Yeah, me too. My dream animated project, this is a funny answer first, is one where I'm successfully able to composite backgrounds and like a 3D camera move in a satisfying way. That is like my, like, that would be like, if I can manage to do that like I wish to, then it can be a part of any project. The struggle is real in trying to match a camera move. Like, there's been so many instances where I've tried to try and match it afterwards, and if I can just find the right pipeline, doesn't matter what the shot is, doesn't matter what the project is or the story or anything like that, just one camera move where you're like, I didn't notice it and it just felt right.
So you're going to do that, and then you're going to like dust off your hands and stand up, walk away from your desk and just lie down and be like, I'm done.
I've done it. I've achieved nirvana. That would be it.
Well, the best part is no one's even going to be able to credit you for it, because everyone will be like, what do you mean? What animated camera move? It was so seamless. I didn't know.
I've had a story in my head for like 10, 15 years now. I think if I got to make something that where I was like the creator, I think is the next sort of cool sort of thing I'd want to do. Because a lot of the time I'm playing support roles in someone else's creation. And it'd be cool to tell my own story.
Yeah. It will be awesome.
I do often think about that when it comes to animation studios, like so many people in those buildings, and you know, every single desk, everyone has five things that they want to turn into a show or a movie, and just to think there's so many stories just ready. Like if someone walked up to them and said, let's make it, they'd be like, right, I've got it all here. I'm ready.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not the only one who thinks about that, because yeah, it's like, it's both incredibly inspiring and kind of sad to think, like you said, every single person in a studio is gonna have their thing that they want to make, that they want to do. And I want to see more of those stories be told in whatever form they can. If there's some way that we could reshape the world so that, I don't know, animation studios employ you for like 8 months out of the year, and then they give you 4 months off to do your own thing, and people just like rotate, so there's always people in the office. So that more people can get their stories out there.
I think places like Google do that on a kind of tech programming thing where they're like, okay, for this amount of time, you got to work on whatever you want. It's your project time. I think that's a really amazing idea for like animated projects.
Yeah, I want to see more people make their thing, you know, because more stories, more comics, more stuff out there in the world, it's only going to make the world a brighter, more vibrant place.
I think that's why it's exciting to see studios like Studio Mala making their own stuff.
Mm-hmm. The Mala minis seem like a really nice way for people to scratch that itch a little. Like, it's a nice idea. I really like the Mala minis for that.
Yeah, definitely.
I love the Mala minis. I think they're genius. It's a genius idea. You know, pay the animators to do something that they want to do anyway. You know, give them the absolute freedom to experiment and do whatever they like. And then, you know, it's more for Studio Mala to show off like the wonderful artists who work with them. It's such a great idea. I am itching to do one myself, I can tell you, but I have about a million ideas.
You know, what you're saying is a great way to guarantee a bit being left in the edit. I wanted to ask about Wander Over Yonder.
Wander Over Yonder was actually my first animation job, so it's very dear to my heart. It's also very dear to my heart because I was a big fan of the show before I got to work on it. So I was geeking out when I got the email from Boulder Media saying that I was going to be able to work on season two.
Oh my goodness.
And I moved to Ireland for it. And I've never looked back.
I'm a big fan of the show, so I just had to get that in there. And how was
wonderful.
Working on it? Was it fun? Of course, if the answer is it wasn't fun, it won't go in. But
I mean, I loved it. I loved it. I think at the time, things were a little bit terse in the studio just because for them, they'd been crunching for a long time on the project. But I was this fresh-faced new person who'd just come in. So I'm sure I was extremely irritating to everyone with my upbeat attitude and my endless energy. But I had an absolute blast working on it and getting to work with so many skilled, wonderful people in Boulder, because they're a wonderful crew and they were so kind and so great, showing me the ropes for everything, you know.
I gathered a few general questions from Mala members, and one that I found interesting is, what helps an animator improve their craft, which isn't doing animation?
One of the best things you can do to improve your craft is to not animate 24 hours a day. I think that there is a big part of the industry that glorifies overworking and tries to push that on people coming into the industry as what you need to do to show you're passionate about it.
I wonder who benefits from that.
Not the animators, I can tell you. I think that a lot of what makes good animation is chatting to your friends and seeing how people around you act and seeing how dogs walk, cycling around on your bike, having life experiences to pull upon.
Well, I think they call animation the illusion of life, and I think you need to know what life is.
You need to live a life to be able to recreate
to
that illusion.
Pour that into it. Yeah.
Also, just a huge aspect of working in animation, I think, is the soft skills, like being good to work with, being able to chat to people and deliver deadlines on time and be responsive. And one of the things that I think I noticed about myself when I was hardcoring it in animation and just working all day, every day, was that I became incredibly boring to talk to because I never had anything to say other than what I'd been working on, because nothing was happening to me. I was getting up and going to my desk and then going to bed and then getting up and going to my desk, and that was it every day.
So you're saying that a way to become a better animator is to not be someone who's boring to talk to?
I'm saying to have experiences that aren't related directly to you animating, so that when you are talking to people who, you know, might want to hire you to have a job and play D&D with you afterwards, or just like become your friend and talk about stuff like this with you.
Oh man, D&D is such a good mechanism of improvised storytelling with like rule mechanics in a game of chance. Any animation studio in the world, you're going to find a DM and a group of them.
You are. But they're like parasites latching onto animation studios, those DMs.
I have an answer that's adjacent to your one, which is I think a pursuit of music is really good. Like, that's part of your answer, but in specifics, I think learning about timing and rhythm and that feel, having that a sense for that, you get that by playing instruments and enjoying music. So mine was very specific and niche, but yeah.
No, I'm really interested in this because it keeps coming up the more I look into animation, the amount of animators who also turn out to be musicians and hearing them talk about the similarities, because certainly at a glance, you would not say that they are in any way similar, but it's amazing just how much is in common. And a really nice take on this I heard recently was animation and music. You can do it alone and you can do good work alone, but it's when you come together with others in the same field that's really where the magic happens. Like, you know, once the band starts up or once like a group of animators start doing their thing, that's really where it happens.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And to speak to that too, just in terms of animation, finding people who are much better than you or finding people who are very different to the way that you do things, I think that can help you improve hugely too. I think a lot of people want to be the best, but working with people who are better than you is so rewarding and expands your skill set so much.
Yeah. I liken it to resonance. Like, you can be in harmony with something that's completely different from you, like mm-hmm. if it works together. And I think learning how you fit collaboratively with people is a really important thing to discover, both about yourself and about others. Like, learning to work together and sounding or making something that feels harmonious, that's like all the parts interlock together. I think you go through a really rough patch when you kind of first graduate, because a lot of group projects in colleges and universities is a lot of kind of smashing people together that wouldn't choose to be, and that is just trial by fire. And I've often heard that likened to like, well, that's what it's going to be like in a studio. And I would disagree that people just get smashed together. I think if you're running a good animation studio and you're hiring well, you're finding those instruments that are going to play well in your orchestra or going to play the sort of music or the like, thinking of it as this thing where it's like you get these discordant members and try and get them to make something together.
Who wants to live with the like flute player in the back who's just like
who wants that? So I think they're missing a very definite trick in colleges and thing of like, you just need to learn how to work together. It's like, yeah, there's a limit to that.
Yeah.
You learn how the kind of people you don't want to work with in those kind of scenarios.
Yeah, 100% to trying to step in rhythm with the rest of your team, and learning that is a skill in itself, you know, learning to harmonize with other people. And I think that's really important in animation. Because like you said, if you are working with a team, you can often make something which is like so much more than you could ever imagine by yourself. Mm-hmm. But the strengths of everyone combined, weird, wonderful things can happen, and you can make things much bigger than you ever thought that you'd be able to alone.
Even if you get like five or six soloists together, learning how to kind of step back and like let others do the solo for that part, and then you're doing the rhythm over here, or you're providing the percussion to let the others kind of shine for a bit, and then kind of swapping. Yeah, harmony, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Folks, thank you so much for your time. And that was a really lovely chat, a very valuable insight into what it is you do. Thank you.
Thank you, Owen, for having us.
Thank you so much for having us. Like, this is really fun. And we really appreciate that you guys reaching out and asking us to come on, because, well, not to blow Studio Mala too many kisses, but we love Studio Mala and we love you guys. And you know, it was awesome to be asked to come on this and do this. And thank you so much for having us.
Oh, heck, you know, come back sometime.
Maybe we will.
The part two.